Welcome to Home Health Revealed, where we share real stories from industry leaders about home health, palliative, and hospice care. Brought to you by Velocity. Grow your home health or hospice agency with the power of Velocity. Velocity's easy-to-read coding and revenue cycle dashboards let you grab your cup of coffee and quickly see the health of your organization.
Welcome to Home Health Revealed podcast. I am your host, Mike Greenlee, and of course, Hannah Vale is in the house. Hannah, what's up?
Yes. Hey, Mike. Oh, not much is up. I'm ready for springtime, I'll tell you that.
Well, let me tell you something. You play around with ChatGPT or a form of ChatGPT. You and
Perplexity,
I like the, what is it called?
Grok?
Grok.
Yeah.
Grok. I was playing around with it today because I wanted to know, like, if somebody was to call me, right? And how would, based off what, you know, what's out there about me, right? How should someone approach me? So, because I was, you know, right? This is pretty good. This is why I love this stuff. You know what I mean? It says, be straightforward and honest, focus on value and partnership. He's built health with partners around solving real problems for agency. It says I'm a stud in there. You can't find it.
Really?
It's in very small print.
Does it say like what you can bench? And
very small print. But it says show passion and confidence, connect on a human level, and respect his time. It says, in short, Michael Greenlee comes across as grounded, principled leader who's serious about his work, but approachable and people-focused. Tailored your approach to reflect respect of his values, trust, results, and collaboration, and you'll likely get his attention.
All right.
Huh. I need to send this to my wife. That's right.
Yeah.
But this, you know, so
I did the same thing. I pulled it up about you. It said that they would be concise and value focused. Avoid cold calls unless you've got a warm intro with someone like Hannah Vale, his podcast co-host.
No, it doesn't.
I swear. I
That's
promise
unbelievable.
You.
I mean, I love this stuff. And then of course you have it do you like your bio. You know, it says, hey, build me a bio, and you can tell it like prompt, like how you want it to kind of do it. And then it makes me sound way cooler than I really am, and actually smarter than I really am. Clearly it can't pull up my GPA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Clearly
I bet
it can't
pull
it
up. Okay.
Nah.
Well, give it time.
Well, anyway, I thought that was cool. We got a great podcast for you today. We're going to be talking about how to optimize your medical supply management for home health and hospice, which, hey, listen, that doesn't sound, you know, like exciting, but Ted, little do you know, Ted makes it exciting. And super exciting. This is going to be a fun podcast. We're going to have a lot of fun. Hopefully I don't get sidetracked like I normally do, but Hannah, I'll let you go ahead and introduce our speaker and we'll get this ship a sailing.
Yes. So Ted Stitzel, he is a fellow Ohioan. So how about those Guardians yesterday against those White Sox?
There we go.
Yes. Thank you so much. Opening season.
It's still a dumb name.
What, Guardians? Oh, I'll tell you another day why I actually have decided to like it.
Dumb.
We've only got one of the Naylor brothers left, but it's okay. We got Bo Naylor. We lost him. Anyways. Okay. I digress here. Ted Stitzel is a seasoned entrepreneur and leader in the medical supplies industry. He serves as president of Reedy Medical Supply Company Incorporated, a company he co-founded in 1992 with his wife, Rita. Reedy Medical specializes in providing disposable medical supplies to the home care and hospice sectors, emphasizing innovative solutions to streamline supply management processes. Ted is also the VP of Doyle Medical LLC, a durable medical equipment or DME company based in Stowe, Ohio, which delivers medical supplies directly to consumers while managing billing through Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurers. With over 50 years of combined experience in the field along with his wife, Ted is dedicated to improving lives through exceptional customer service and operational efficiency. He holds a Bachelor of Science in Finance from University of Akron. He also added that he has been married for 33 years, has 6 kids and 1 grandkid. Welcome to the show, Ted.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, Hannah. And
Ted,
Michael, of course.
Super, super glad you're here. Now, I got 2 questions.
Sure.
That are just off the grid. You ready for these?
Throw them at me.
Now, at what point do you and your lovely wife of 33 years sit down and say, okay, let's talk about how many kids? And because you have 6, I mean, that's a big number. I mean, that's that's a big grocery bill, Ted. Tell me, how'd you guys decide? So, and then once you had 6, did you talk about 7 or did you retire?
So let's quantify this. We had six kids in 7 years. So it was a little bit of a tight span. There were no twins in
that. Wow.
Wow. That was right. So you know, we've had comments of we need a better hobby, and we didn't have a cable. So anyways, we had six stacked up there. There was no decision to have one or seven or 12 or whatever it was. We just ended up with six.
Yeah.
So, and for the most part, they're all wonderful kids. You know, one's in the office next to me. You could probably hear me right now. Our youngest is working with us on the Doyle Medical side, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I got two girls and I was afraid of a third one.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm out. I'm retired.
Well, you go from man to zone from two to three, you know, so you gotta be careful on that one.
No doubt. And now the only question I always find fascinating, is how did you get into this line of work? What drew you to this line, especially because you've been doing this for a really long time, even though you're 25.
Sure. Exactly. It's odd.
Yeah. Tell me, how'd you get into the field? What were you passionate about?
So I actually was looking in college to try and find we were going to start up a Fridays. There was a group of us that was going to start up a TGI Fridays. Thought it was a great idea. Then we realized that, you know, they didn't franchise. It was only company held. So that kind of fell through. Always had the entrepreneurial bug. Had a sister-in-law that owned a home care agency in Wadsworth, Ohio, beautiful Wadsworth, Ohio. And she was just a dynamo, super motivated, very exciting to be around, was always, you know, she always had kind of the family gatherings at her place. And she inspired me. So I went to work for a company by the name of Edge Park Surgical, which I think most people know of. They're now owned by Cardinal. At the time, they were not. And I worked there for about 3 months. In the interim of working there, I was married. So I started working there, I think, in January. Got married in February, and I told my wife, hey, I can quit my job and do this. So 2 months after that, quit the job, and here we are today. So it was really, I owe a lot to my sister-in-law, Mary Lee, who passed, unfortunately, in her 40s due to lupus. But she was a real dynamo and a great motivator.
Well, I tell you, I've enjoyed, you know, we've met several times at different conferences. And what I like about you is, you know, you love the industry. You love educating people in certain particular fields, such as what we're going to be talking about today. So I'm really excited to get started in this. So we've put some really tough questions together for you. All right.
Let's get after it.
And just to the audience, we don't share these in advance because we want to see if these people are honest. And Ted, well, I mean, here we go. Right.
All right.
I'm just kidding. No, we don't. Ted's a good dude. All right. So Ted, you know, this is we hear a lot about this. So help me understand. So how can home health agencies better align their supply utilization practices with CMS, DME guidelines to reduce costs without compromising patient care?
Well, step one is understanding, you know, what their supply utilization is. And I know, you know, as you look at this, people are kind of like, this is kind of like paint drying, but it's really rather exciting since I've been doing it for a few years. You look at the data to understand where I'm at, how many supplies am I sending out to patients? What controls do I have in place? And a lot of agencies don't necessarily have these controls. And then when you share the data with them and you say, hey, you're using a product that, you know, CMS would recommend you do 12 times a month and you've sent them 30, it becomes a very eye-opening situation and a real opportunity to cut costs. So, you know, costs obviously are incurred by just plain old supply purchases. But if you can optimize your supply utilization and your cost, it's obviously a double-edged sword, allowing you to reduce both costs.
So one of the things you mentioned we were talking is that the medical supplies is the second highest spend after labor.
Correct.
And I don't know that people always think about that, or maybe they do, right, when you're in home health and hospice. But I think it just brings it to the top that that is such a topic of importance to look at. And so having a partner like you, somebody who can really think through those operational needs, but also I think everybody in home health, in post-acute, is looking at how do we maintain quality, but look at our margins and look at our cost. So when you're looking at that, what are the most common challenges agencies face with trunk stock management, right? The people who are driving around with the trunk full of stuff in their car. And then what practical solutions have you seen that have worked effectively for that in particular?
Absolutely. So if we take a step back, you know, a clinician's goal is to take care of the patient, right? They're not necessarily worried about the costs involved. Certainly they need to be cognizant of the cost, but they're not necessarily focused on that. So getting the agency to educate their staff on what these supplies costs, you know, really are, helps in realizing as the clinician looks at supplies and says, well, maybe I could use this product, but here's a product that's less expensive. They can start to make educated decisions. When you roll that out to trunk stock management, you end up having essentially, you know, mobile inventories with all these clinicians that are out in the field. As long as they're managing it appropriately, and you can manage it appropriately by having a formulary in place, having par limits so that they can't exceed items, certainly having quantity and dollar thresholds so that they can't go totally crazy with it. We certainly enjoy when clinicians order a lot from us, but you know, usually when the bills come, the finance department calls and they're not as excited with us. But having them use those supplies in an effective manner allows them to take care of the patient, doesn't compromise quality whatsoever. And you're not looking at freight charges because you're sending one small item to a patient's home because it's already with the clinician. So a robust trunk stock management program is critical. And to have management involved in that is absolutely key, you know, so that you dig down, you say, okay, these are the 20 items we're going to carry. These are the quantity limits that we're going to put in place. And then having some sort of an accountability factor is obviously, you know, what makes the process work. So that's typically a way, the way you roll out or manage a trunk stock program that will control costs from an agency perspective.
You know, Ted, one of the things that we do with our clients as they're going through implementation is we do an operational assessment. We do that because there's so many factors that are important, you know, to help them to create the predictable revenue. Mm-hmm. And so we go through a very in-depth process to really understand and to help them understand how things are working. Now that process has uncovered a lot of things that agencies have been shocked about, but I'm curious, you know, when we talk about everything you've mentioned so far, is there a document, a form or something that flows that takes somebody through that? Hey, if I wanted to change my managed it, medical supply practices, right? And I want to get aligned and I want to do what we're talking about today. Is there anything that exists that says, okay, here's kind of a step-by-step process on how to do that?
So there, CMS puts out LCDs, local carrier determinations, that basically are the roadmap for utilization, right? And that's you know, pretty common in the DME world. The challenge that from just a manager of a home care agency's perspective is that they need the data, right? You need to look at the historical data and you need to look at what our utilization has been. So for us, when we have our existing customer base, we can dive into their patient data and then we can compare that to the guidelines. And then we come back and say, look, you are overutilizing on these, you know, 20 patients and here's why, and here's the spend. If we bring a new prospect to the table, if we can dive into their historical data, if they can get it from a previous vendor, we can go ahead and slice and dice it and then give them a report to show that. There isn't necessarily a step-by-step process outside of really just looking at the data. And then you're comparing timeframes to utilization to you know, recommended guidelines. So that's it's a pretty manageable process, but getting the data is key.
Yeah. So you were talking about earlier about freight. Mm-hmm. And the cost and the, you know, managing that. So when we talk about freight and the overall supply spend, mm-hmm. how can agencies minimize that spend? And I don't know if this is relevant or not, but we know there's all these new tariffs. So, and if they're using supply companies that may be getting some of those supplies, I don't know if they get them all from the States or some that's from overseas, but it could that play a role in some of seeing an increase in spend and how do they minimize some of that expense while still maintaining efficiency?
Well, you know, you have a couple of questions there. So
that was like 12 questions.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm only going to remember two because, you know, my attention span is not that long. So you'll have to throw them back at me in a minute. So tariff wise, you know, obviously that's a big unknown. We're all kind of looking at to figure out what's going to happen. We have had a number of vendors come back and say, here's what we're looking at. Here's what we're predicting. You know, a lot of it is a 10% increase. Not everything was going to be increased. And then, you know, initially it was going to be China. Now it's going to be the entire world. So who knows where this is going to shake out over the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. But I would expect there's going to be price increases. Coming back to the freight comment though. So, you know, we talked about that robust trunk stock. You know, you have to have a balance in that trunk stock where I can't carry too much where it either gets hot in the middle of the summer and becomes ineffective, or it's so small that I don't have the products that I need, you know, or it, you know, rolls around in my trunk and nobody wants a product that's supposed to be sterile that now has dog hair all over it and tire marks. So there's a balance there. But if you have enough trunk stock, you can eliminate a delivery charge. So in a catheter or a patient that's getting a Foley catheter, let's say, if the clinician carries with them the appropriate items, a tray, a catheter, a bag, they could go ahead and perform that catheter change without having to have the supply shipped to the patient. Well, if you carry two or three of those catheters with you and you do two or three of those procedures over the course of a month, you can have that replenished to the clinician. You've now reduced four shipping charges into one shipping charge. So obviously there's a 75% reduction right there just in that simple solution.
Yeah, just things to think through.
Absolutely. It requires the clinician to give some thought to their patient base that they're going to take care of. Some challenges that are, you know, some of these agencies that we work with are so large that, you know, they don't necessarily know who their patient base is because you have multiple clinicians going to the same patient. So it's tough to predict that. But on a smaller scale, you know, a lot of these visits are very predictable over a week's time. And if you look at managing my trunk stock or my office stock, you know, at the office, you can really cut down on your freight costs by having those, you know, carried by the clinician.
And then just thinking about like other, you know, direct ship, what about like the Amazons of the world? How are they affecting what you do with your business?
So, you know, Amazon certainly is a beautiful distribution model. It's also a horrific distribution model for anybody in distribution. There's a couple of things that you need to be cautious with Amazon. One is quality of product. You know, we've seen agencies that order products through Amazon and they're going to come in and they're substandard. So in dealing with any medical supplier that's been around for a bit, you know, whoever that may be, they're typically only going to carry products that are acceptable, that are, you know, that are effective. We had a clinician we worked with for many years. She called it the window of efficacy. So if you have a product that works, it doesn't have to be a Cadillac and it doesn't have to be a whatever the bottom end is, you know, Chevy or below. As long as it's somewhere in between, it doesn't matter. Right. And that's the philosophy that we've always taken with our customer base, so that, you know, you have a decent product at a decent price. Amazon, you're just not sure exactly what you're going to get from a quality standpoint. The other component that you need to think about is when you go patient direct ship, you can order 7 calcium alginates, 3 gauze bandages, and a roll of tape. You know, Amazon, you're buying everything by the box. So there's obviously inefficiencies when you're ordering by Amazon because you ultimately end up having extra product in the home, which is a waste.
Yeah.
You know, well, I was just going to say, you know, I always think I have ideas and perspectives, and I think kind of crazy, Ted. So I'm throwing this out here, you know, because the next question I want to ask you, I want to talk about long-term partnerships with medical supply company and, you know, for that consistent quality and cost savings.
We are a distributor. We have, you know, we have 2 warehouses. We have all kinds of products in stock.
Here's what I loved about Ted's story though, too, when we were talking in Ohio and he was telling me, you know, in starting up this company, right, cost efficiency doesn't come until you can get to that bulk purchasing power. So he was in his house boxing up 80 things to send to people to get this company started. Like the amount of grit that I know that Ted has is just admirable. And
that's nice. Thank you.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that want to start companies because they're tired of being employees, but then they start a company and they're like, oh man, I don't even know if I want to own a company, because it is hard work. And that you are, you have to bootstrap and you have to have a lot of grit. And a lot of people don't see the hard work and dedication, sweat, tears, fear, anxiety, you know, that it takes to build a company. So,
you guys can both attest to that. And certainly if you see, you know, the golfer with the beautiful golf swing, that didn't happen overnight. That happened over years and years of practice, right? Or the basketball player, whatever. It's, you know, and those aren't always fun days, you know, but we're blessed to be where we're at, and you just keep on grinding.
Yeah. Well, I love long-term relationships. I love, I just, you know, everybody I use from my long company to whoever it is, right? You got to have great relationships, and building long-term relationships are very important. So if I was looking for a medical supply company, because I want consistency and I want, you know, of course everybody wants cost savings, right? Everyone's cost conscious to some degree. What do you look for in that?
Well, you know, first step is to look for stability from a representative standpoint. So that's, you know, that's really key. You know, the big guys of the world, while they're, you know, the big bulk, the billion-dollar players, if you will, they're great companies. Certainly wouldn't knock them. But what they're typically doing is they're always kind of building the bench, right? So they're always, you've got a rep that comes in, and then they're either going up to management or they're going out somewhere, right? They're going to move people around. So with the bigger guys, you're typically going to have a rep for a number, you know, a year or less, and then you're going to get somebody else. You're going to constantly turn that. And that becomes rather difficult to build that relationship with. What we've done, we've kind of inverted the triangle, if you will, in that we had reps about post-COVID, right about 2021, we had our reps move on. You know, we had them go on to other places. They're no longer working for us. And what I've done is basically become the point person for the front end of the company. So as we bring on new business, I spend a lot of time with individuals. I'm the one that meets with them on a quarterly basis to make sure that they're going through, you know, utilization and saving money, because everybody likes to save money. But behind me is a phenomenal team of individuals. So I've got a great operations manager, a great customer service manager, you know, great team in customer service, great purchasing people in warehouse, and the same thing on the Doyle side. So we've been really, really blessed with a lot of people that really we've tried to empower to make decisions, to be able to take care of the customer, so that you don't necessarily have to have the sales rep that's showing up at your door every day, but you know, if you send an email, you know, within 15 minutes, you're going to get a response. And if they can't answer it, they're going to tell you that, and they're going to let you know that they're working on it. So it's those type of relationships that, you know, sooner or later, you're going to get where you need to get to, because it's all based on trust and experience. So I'm a firm believer in that, in the long-term relationships, because, you know, the old adage, you know, live by price, die by price. You know, there's always going to be somebody that's going to sell cheaper than you, period. Mm-hmm. Right. Amazon being a great example, you know, and Amazon's customer service is non-existent. You can't call them up and say, should I get a calcium alginate or a foam dressing? Because they don't know. Their distribution's model, you know, beautiful, but you know, it's built on service and trust, and then it has to be, you know, a mutually beneficial relationship. So what I always tell our prospects when we sit down together, as long as it's legal, moral, and ethical, there's nothing that we can't do together, you know, and we can get very creative, because it's, you know, we're, you know, short of answering to my wife and answering to the bank, I don't have to answer to anybody else, you know? Mm-hmm. So it gives us opportunities to have a lot of fun with the,
those are company. Great long-term relationships to have.
Well, that's a good response too with the wife thing. Cause yeah, mom ain't having nobody have, you know what I'm saying? Tell you what, that's right.
Ted, you have seen a lot of change, and, you know, I know that.
That's like a backhanded compliment.
I'm just saying you've been married for 33 years, right? You have to be a master at changing and growing. No, that's funny. You've been a part of implementing change, right? As you've grown this company, and we, you know, Michael and I know that every time you grow, there's growing pains, and then implementing change with people, because that's who we're dealing with on those relationship side, you know, it can be challenging and a lot to think through. So one of the things that you and I talked about, we had a great conversation, enjoyed talking to you, but you referenced some concepts from a book called Switch.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I want you to talk about that a little bit.
So Switch, I'd encourage everybody to read. It's by Chip and Dan Heath. It was brought to my attention. We're on I'm on a solve committee, which is it's Cleveland Clinic committee. Basically, we're looking at their processes and helping them cut their costs. And they're the ones that brought the book to me. And it talks a lot about change and how you can approach change and how you can bring people along. You know, they equate change to an elephant and a rider, right? So the rider of the elephant in the circus, if you will, is your logic, and the elephant is the emotion. And you're trying to figure out how to navigate the elephant and the rider at the same time. And then they also talk a lot about smoothing the path, right? So it's, you take those three components when you look at change, and you say, okay, you know, what's the emotional aspect to it? What's the logical aspect to it? And then what's the situational aspect to it, right? They talk a ton about when you analyze issues with employees, not that, you've ever had issues mm-hmm. with employees, of course.
Nope.
You know, it becomes, is it a personnel issue or is it a situational issue? And it's made me really look at things a lot differently, where you realize, hey, maybe this person wants to do the right thing or the right process, but there's something that's getting in their way. And if you remove the impediment, then, you know, the water flows freely. So it's a great book. It's got a lot of different aspects to it, but it really opens your eyes to being aware of subtleties that are causing problems that you didn't even realize were causing problems.
Yeah. I'm reading a book called Let 'Em.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys heard that?
No.
So
no.
I told my wife that, and she's like, oh yeah, she has an amazing podcast.
This the Mel Robbins book.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
yes.
I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's kind of a fascinating book. I'm gonna look at the Switch book, because we're constantly always changing, you know, as we're growing. But the Let 'Em book too, you know, she's got a great personality. You can see that she's probably pretty fun to hang out with. But yeah, and also real, right? So you can sense that I listen to the book, I don't read the book. So, but it's pretty cool about just let them, and then, you know, let you, you know, so if you let them, because basically what she's saying is there's things you can't control mm-hmm. and you want to control them, but every time you're trying to control things, you either get the anxiety of it or whatever. And it's not even really your problem some of the times, you know, that you're trying to control something. So maybe those two books go hand in hand, you know, as you're changing, and, you know, maybe you ought to maybe not be so controlling. I don't know. People say I'm controlling sometimes. I don't believe them.
Yeah, sure. Let's see. I've known you now for about 35 minutes, and I might get the impression that you like to control things periodically, but don't take that offense.
You got to show me passion and confidence.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with
you
that.
You have to get a warm intro from Hannah Bialik's co-host.
That's come right. On, man. Hey, you didn't even know we distributed spies, but that's okay. I don't, not that I remember that or anything. Coming back to the Switch book, you know, they talk about how people make change with literally nominal dollars, $0 or zero influence. Right.
Yep.
A great example, and I won't go too far with it, but there was a buyer for Target, and she wanted to influence what was being purchased or what was being provided by the vendors. And she had zero influence over the vendors. Right. But what she did is she brought vendors in, and she set up a display. And ultimately she put in amongst this yellow, whatever tops or whatever they were, she put this blue top in that she wanted this particular color worked. And she said, hey, do you see how that color pops? And she got these people to buy in without necessarily saying, hey, I want you to make blue, you know, shirts or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And there's multiple examples of that in Switch where, you know, a lot of people don't have the leverage, don't have the money, but they still make pretty massive changes. It's kind of cool.
Well, I think sometimes when you don't have the influence or the money, you have the drive to be scrappy. And you have to figure it out, right? And Absolutely. There are just people that I've met in life that, gosh, I don't know if you call it grit, you call it give a rip, you call it something, right? But they have it. They have that extra
figure it out. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I thought that was being thrown at me.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe both of us. I don't know.
Who knows? No, I agree. You don't. We've always said you don't know what you're capable of until your back's against the wall, right? I mean, you know, you can grind it out when you need to grind it out, and you get very, very creative in those moments, you know. So,
yep.
Well, Ted, I appreciate you making time to be part of our podcast today and sharing the information that you know. But let's say somebody wants to get a hold of you, learn a little bit more about what you do. How would they go about doing that?
It's hit our website, readymed.com. It's readymed.com. That's the easiest way to get a hold of us. You know, I really appreciate the time that you've spent with me today. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed the conversation. Love to do it again sometime. Wish you both the best, and I'm greatly appreciative of the time.
All right.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Until next time.
All right. Thank you.